Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So President Biden gave his first address to the UN today, to the General Assembly, and talked about, look, you know, we've got to do some relentless diplomacy on global challenges. He talked about climate change. He talked about future generations and how we got to work with our partners and we got to do a better job to help our future and our children and all of this stuff. And you go, yeah, I'm with you. How do we get something passed through our Senate is the question I keep having. But we've got to do things on the international level. We've got to do more to push a climate agenda that's going to leave something, I don't know, something less warm for my children and grandchildren. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what that might look like, I've asked Mike Williams to come talk with us. Mike's a senior fellow for energy and environmental policy over at the Center for American Progress, their website, AmericanProgress.org. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here.
So did you happen to catch the president's spiel today in front of the UN General Assembly?
I did. It was very, very good. It's heartwarming. It's gives me a dash of hope, just a dash at this point. You know, the Senate is making it so that the rest of that hope is still tamped down. But yes, I did, and it was good.
Now, you know, I tweeted something out today, and I had a organization reach out to me and yell at me because Joe Manchin's not the problem. The problem to our climate issues is not just Joe Manchin, but it's China and India. And I go, yeah, I agree. China and India are a problem, but so is Joe Manchin.
Well, the person who reached out, they're not wrong. I mean, so in terms of existing emissions, China is producing the most emissions to date currently. They also had a pretty interesting announcement today. I don't know if those folks saw or if you saw. The president of China noted that they will no longer build coal plants outside or finance the building of coal plants outside of China, which is a significant change in what they're planning on doing. Significant change. So it was pretty big news in terms of fighting global climate change from not just President Biden, who stood up there and showing leadership, but from China too. And so, but again, we can't use leverage. We can't pull off diplomacy if we don't get our own house in order. And that comes from starting on the White House and then through the Senate and House. And right now we know that the Republicans are not gonna pass anything that does what we need it to do. There's the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which is, you know, probably it's good for jobs, definitely, and no doubt about that. But in terms of climate change, it's a net, you know, maybe slight benefit. So if we actually want to take on the climate crisis, we need the bigger bill, the Build Back Better agenda. That's what we need. It requires a significant amount of investments. And so that we can do that with only Democratic votes. So we're focusing on the folks in the Democratic Party to get that done.
Which is why I focused on Joe Biden, or why I focused on Joe Manchin, I'm sorry, on saying, you know, I tweeted out, I go, you know, I hope in 50 years my kids don't look back and, you know, say F Joe Manchin because I'm roasting. That was it. And I had the mine workers reach out to me and say, well, it's not Joe Manchin's fault. And I'm going, yeah, how can we make China and India do better when we're not doing better? When they can just turn it around and go, you first.
Yeah, and if you look at historical emissions, the problem historically is because of westernized societies who industrialized earlier. So Western Europe, the US, the biggest contributors to global climate change. Emissions stay in the atmosphere for many, many years. We put them up there. The European countries put them up there. We have a historical responsibility to lead. But also the crisis at such a point right now and such a problem, it's a crisis, that we need every country to act. So it can't just be, you know, the previous older models of Kyoto and such where countries like the US and Europe only act. President Obama actually changed that dynamic with the Paris Agreement and made it so, no, everybody has to put in their actions at this point. And so that was a good movement. Countries haven't done enough. we're one of them. We had a four-year hiatus, Rick. I don't know if you were around for that four-year hiatus.
It's kind of a blur.
Democracy and climate action and all those things that didn't happen for 4 years. But we're behind the eight ball. And so, but now we need to make up for that time. We need to have those massive investments. We need to step out and lead. And it's, you know, it's something in a sane world, we wouldn't be railing against certain specific Democratic senators. We would be able to just point out that there are 50 Republican senators who are like, nope, not going to do anything serious on climate change. But this is the world we're given. We have to live by Senate rules, and arcane rules, and what a parliamentarian says, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And now we're going to Alaska here in a couple of weeks. And, you know, there are two Republican, you know, senators from Alaska who could easily come over. The last time we were there, we were watching the glaciers melt. And you go, you know, you go to some of the other places where they've completely been wiped away, and you go right in your backyard. It's happening. You can see it. It literally every year is going back further and further. Maybe you could come along and save us from Joe Manchin.
Senator Murkowski is actually she's fairly enlightened on the issue of climate change. You know, she's taken some obviously problematic stances. But, you know, when she talks about the climate crisis, you can tell that she understands it and that she gets it. And she's talked about things like carbon pricing and ways to transition our energy system. So you can see that it's there, but it's how do we get from it being internally to making that honestly, that political decision to step out and be a leader and to actually take those hard votes to deeply invest in clean energy, to change our transportation system, to change how we manufacture goods, and really change America into the actual leader on the climate crisis.
Yeah. Now, I sat in today on a climate job summit. You know, the New York Federation of Labor had a climate summit with a bunch of folks from around the country, and I thought it was fantastic. And the idea is, yeah, we got to do something on climate change. It's an imperative. It's something we have to do for our children and for future generations. But more importantly, and they looked at it from, yeah, that's a given now. We have to do it. We don't have a choice. For them, it was, you know, how do we remake an economy that where those jobs are good family-sustaining wage jobs? Those are high-wage jobs. Those are career jobs, as opposed to the kind of transitions we've seen in the past, where the people who are losing out ended up crashing onto the pavement and being left behind. And I like the fact that we're talking about making a sane, rational transition to a new kind of economy.
It's the honestly what we should have been doing from the start. And it shows that the impact of the labor movement, when folks from the labor movement decide to step in and take control of the conversation, or at least to really inject themselves into the conversation and say, we need to do this, but we need to do it right. You know, the clearest example of this are the tax credits for clean energy. Now, folks might say like, oh, tax credits, what's that going to do? Because, you know, honestly, people often have like, that's my solution to this problem is a tax credit. But interestingly enough, there is a tax package that is part of the reconciliation bill that would do so much for driving emissions down, because the investments would spur a vast uptake and deployment of solar, of offshore wind, of heat pumps, so on and so forth, big utility scale projects, Rick. It would change how they get those tax credits to basically turn them into grants to really drive this industry. But the thing that's been missing are labor standards, are the strings attached to say, all right, you want billions of dollars in our taxpayer money in federal subsidies. You need to make sure that the jobs you're creating are high quality, that you're treating people well, they're lifting up communities, and they're union.
And to highlight that, I'll give you a perfect example. Because back in 2011, we put solar panels on our house. The state of Pennsylvania had a sunshine fund. The Obama administration had a fund to encourage people to buy solar. And we did. We got a good deal. The problem is the solar panels were made in China, and the workers who put them on the roof were subcontractors. You know, everything that you're saying is I hope a lesson that we learned from that failed moment. Now, look, I love my panels. We create about a little over half of our electricity. A good deal for us, good deal for the environment, all around good stuff, except for the jobs that it created that are now gone because the Republicans in this state have destroyed the energy portfolio. But we have the opportunity to get this policy right with Buy American provisions, with PLAs and project labor agreements, and Davis-Bacon. We have the chance to remake an economy and our climate.
Yeah, so as it's currently structured, PLAs, Davis-Bacon attached to those subsidies. Domestic content, Buy America, attached to those subsidies. It's in there. We just have to get this now over the finish line. This is precedent setting. We have not ever done this to the tax code. The tax code has always been the willy-nilly, just like hand corporate subsidies out for sometimes, most of the time. Well, sometimes for common good, sometimes definitely just handing out corporate welfare. But we've never really dug in and attached, you know, public good standards and especially worker and labor standards to it. This is the first time. So we're setting a precedent that's needed and damn important. And so it's a really good thing. The other piece too is the electric vehicle standards. Not only is there a domestic content piece of it, but there's a bonus credit if it's built union. And this is the first time we have the legislation explicitly saying, if you build this union, you get extra credit. You get extra dollars on this. So you can choose to buy a Chevy Bolt or a Tesla. And currently, one of them will get you, if this bill passes, one of them will get you $4,000 more in subsidies than the other, because that's a good thing. Yeah. Because the Chevy Bolt is providing high quality union jobs and supporting communities, whereas the Tesla is using workers and not allowing them to unionize and pushing down those communities. So it makes the companies have to think clearly of, like, do we want to work with the workforce and allow them to have a voice on the job, or do we want to slum it and keep pushing down and going to right to work states and not building them correctly?
No, I again, this is another one of those moments where I go, Joe Biden wasn't my first choice, but in retrospect, he was the best choice.
It's been pretty remarkable. I think, you know, people are hemming and hawing and I'm using the wrong words, whatever, but they're getting all up in arms about polling right now, about his popularity, so on and so forth. We're still, like, very much in the early stages. And when we look at what's actually coming out of this administration substantively, it is the most pro working people administration in my lifetime.
Yep.
And probably in my parents' lifetime, going back to FDR Truman time, by far. I think no questions asked, there's no challenge to that. Everything he talks about is, how do we do this in a way that supports working families? How do we do this in a way that lifts up the middle class, that supports communities, that lifts up people who are from disadvantaged and oppressed communities? By far, the most pro-working family president we've had in decades.
Now, I'm looking at this moment as possibly a reset of you know, 40 years of supply side voodoo Reaganomics, and kind of a reset to what my grandparents' generation built. This idea that you could have a union job where one income can support a family, that you had, you know, policies that pushed for smart procurement and smart investment, that, you know, maybe we have this little bit of a reset, that we're not just feeding the corporate and the wealth class's special interest, that maybe the rest of us will matter a little bit. But I keep going back to it, you know, the House and the Senate, I got some struggles, because, again, it comes back down to money and politics and who owns who at this point. And that's where my frustration lies, because all of these programs seem like stuff we need and we have needed for a very long time.
We do need them, and we have needed them for a very long time. Not to just completely repeat you, Rick, but it's 100% correct. And yes, we have to battle the political battles that are in front of us. We have to battle the corporations that are going to be lobbying like crazy and have already donated heavily to politicians across party lines. And we just have to deal with that. And so we have to just fight and fight and fight to make this work. Because if we don't pass this bill, I'm not sure if we have another shot.
Because that's the next question I was going to ask you, because I have some fatalist friends who are saying, it's already too late. Why bother? It's over. We missed that 10 years ago. I've got other friends who go, no, we got to stop right now. We don't have time. Today it has to end. And then there are others going, no, we've got until 2050. And, you know, there are numbers all over. You're the expert. Where are we?
So let me start with a clear answer, but that doesn't give details. we need to stop right now. So that middle one, the Goldilocks answer, that's the one we need to do right now. We need to make the pivot right now. So now, when I say stop right now, I'm not saying stop all emissions and pollution right now. We need to make that massive pivot now. So passing this legislation now, sending the signals to markets, sending our all the government apparatuses to move our economy in a place that moves towards clean energy, towards a cleaner economy now. That needs to happen right now. We can't wait. We push it back 10, 15 years, even 5 years. We make it worse. The folks say it's already too late. That's also wrong, because we have to think of this not as black and white. We did it. We didn't. We won. We lost. It's not that. This is a spectrum. This is a matter of how much warming are we baking into the atmosphere right now? And just using the numbers that the IPCC uses, are we baking in 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming? Are we baking in 2 degrees? Are we baking in 4 degrees? Might not sound like much to you, Rick, but the difference between 1.5 degrees and 4 degrees warming is cities in the United States being completely gone by the end of the century. Completely gone. And so that's the difference. That's what we're arguing over right now. Are we keeping this to 1.5 degrees Celsius warming, which is what we called for in the Paris agreements and we absolutely need to, and what President Biden campaigned on, and what this reconciliation would put us on a path to get there? Or are we going to fail and it just gets worse? Because if we keep it to 1.5 degrees, to your fatalist friends, we're still going to feel some warming impacts. We absolutely are. I mean, we felt it this summer. There's wildfires raging.
Yep.
There are stronger and stronger hurricanes. There are hurricanes that get weaker and turn into tropical storms and then flood New York City. That's what happened this summer, right? That's already baked in because of years of inaction or not enough action. But we can make that decision to pivot now, hold it to 1.5 degrees of warming, and then we can adapt to what's already baked in, and then eventually it can tail off over the next couple decades. That's what we're fighting for.
And it's what we do. Now is the answer. And this, I keep saying this, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, we need it now. But Mike, I appreciate the time. I appreciate your expertise. As always, great talking with you, my friend. Keep up the great work. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Anytime, Rick. Have a great night.
You too. Good stuff. Our good friend Mike Williams, Senior Fellow of Energy and Environmental Policy there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.